Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John and he's Mike and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things and stuff and things.
Great, now I've got to fit that over the starting music.
Watcher!
Hello,
we're so, special edition today.
You may be able to tell it sounds different.
Yes.
We're in a living room.
We're on the road.
We are.
We're doing the road show in Mike's house.
Yes. Outside broadcast.
Mike, of course, being famous from Killed in a Smiling Accident. A podcast which he hasn't done for ages.
Oh, yeah. Pod fade.
Slight pod fade, yes.
And also a rather excellent guide to flying World War II planes around.
All War Thunder, all the time.
Excellent War Thunder expert stuff there, yeah.
So, do you want to kick off with what you've been playing, Tim?
Yeah, I'm going to crack on with Guild Wars 2. They've done away with the Clockwork Scarlet Briar Mega Pinata Loot Festival invasion thing, and now it's the super return of, apparently this had done this before, but it's the Super Adventure Box. Is their big living world update thing, and I went and had a look, and I was professionally grumpy at it, and I'm going to rant a bit about now as well.
You're professionally grumpy about most things.
I know. Well, I suppose pro-am grump, really. No one's paying me to do this, which is a shame. I'd like to be paid to be grumpy. That would be quite good. But, no, okay, so those wacky Azura and their Crystal Maya Inca tech, basically one of them called Professor Moto, has come up with essentially what amounts to a kind of Tyrian virtual reality simulation block unit thing that you go to Ratasum and you go inside. And inside is a fantastic sort of 8-bit Super Mario-style world, which apparently has some sort of pretext about you have to... It's a training exercise or a teaching device or something. And you go in there, and I tweeted a screenshot about it. Look in my Twitter feed for that, and along with my my rantings as well. And it's... The screenshot I entitled "What is this? I don't even." It was quite inexplicable, to be honest. And it seems to be the current living world update thing for this next month.
Sounds fantastic.
I know.
Sounds like it fits perfectly.
It's just so game jarring. It's like, what is Guild Wars even 2 even doing anymore? I don't understand. Yeah, apparently you go in there and there's a fantastic stylized Super Mario style lobby thing with loads of people in there jumping around. They even plays a little boop noise when you jump, you know.
At least you can jump.
Your own character stays the same. You don't get pixelated and 8-bitted yourself, which just makes it look even more absurd because you've got this strapping Norn warrior in full armour and broadsword and everything, jumping around in sort of jaggedy square Green Hill Country type Sonic world. And it just, what? Yeah. It just really sort of stunned me a bit, and I was trying to work out why and how and why again.
So is there any in-game logic at all that explains...
You can explain anything you like away in the Guild Wars 2 universe with Azura. They're like little rabbit-eared geniuses who are inventing technology that's so sufficiently advanced it doesn't even look like magic anymore.
That's because they already have
magic's everywhere.
Magic's so advanced it looks like technology.
It looks like science, yeah. And you just say, "Science, Azura!" And you can basically put anything you like in that game at all.
So they're equivalent to the planet side to nanites.
I suppose a nanite did it. It's about the same as saying a wizard did it. So you basically go into this lobby and I thought, all right, well, you know, curmudgeonly as I am, I thought, I'll have a go so I can rant properly about what I'm talking about. And it turns out it's just some weird sort of pickup group five-man doorways into instance dungeons anyway. And I didn't have four other people, and I didn't want to join with all of these people in there who are doing 8-bit retro stuff. So I don't really know what goes on then. Apparently they've added new worlds. I got some feedback on Twitter, some people who'd been there, notably Askar. I think he pointed out that apparently they did this. It's an April Fool's joke.
Well, it's not April.
Yes, you might be. Well done, yes, go to head of class. Very observant. This kind of thing annoys me quite a lot, actually. And it's not just Guild Wars 2 done it. You see it everywhere. Presumably interns or new members of the development team will be given the April Fool thing to do. And they'll massively overachieve and come up with like a quarter again of game content and suddenly make it only available for like 2 days around April. So everyone rushes in there and goes, "Well, this is brilliant." And then it goes away because it's not April anymore. April Fool's is over, back to normal thing, and everyone complains lots. And the thing's MMO, I don't know whether it's just that MMO devs can't throw content away or whether MMO players are just so desperate for new and different things to do that invariably what happens is the April Fool thing will be so popular it needs to be brought back and standardised and made available all year round. And that's essentially what this Super Adventure Box is. The whole 8-bit thing was just a sort of quite a funny 8-bit joke, but then they sort of, it's back now in the Back to School edition, and it's got new worlds in there. Apparently World 4-4 is in there now, and said, yeah, it's all very Super Mario. And it just irritates me on a number of levels because I'm quite a cross bunny.
It sounds brilliant. It almost makes me want to sign up and play.
You know what? I don't even know what actually you're supposed to do in there. I mean, there's obviously outside is a new NPC with a new shop that takes new tokens. Yeah. And if you get 300 tokens by doing a thing, you get a stuff and a cosmetic. There's a whole load of weapon skins, which are all jaggy 8-bit variants of the normal weapons. I mean, it looks quite funny and quite amusing, but it's going to be really irritating seeing everyone in the normal world running around with, like, you know, 8-bit jagged pixel swords the whole time, because you're trying to, it's a real hard work. I try so hard to engage myself in their world and, you know, follow their lore and be a good citizen and get into the spirit of it all, and then someone runs past with, like, dealy boppers on, or they've got an 8-bit pixel sword, and I just sort of cry and weep in a corner, really. And I just wish they'd, you know, stick to their own lore a bit more often. That would be nice. So, yes, I don't know how long that's going to be there for, probably a month or so, to get everyone grind out there. Quite colossal amount of bauble bubbles, apparently, the currency you collect for these. Yes, you see the reference?
Yeah.
And so, yes, that's your big thing. I miss the Scarlet Briar invasions already. At least, you know, being nauseous from overlooting was something I could cope with. it does seem very similar in format to the Fractals that they added a long time ago, which is essentially just 5-man repeat, rinse and repeat sort of dungeon content, which I thought we already had a fair bit of. I don't know. I think perhaps this is more aimed at folks who've hit the end of the buffers and run out of stuff to do in the normal campaign. But I'm always being cross in there because outside that whirly is a massive dragon destroying your world. Stop mucking about in the blinking NES simulator and get out there with your sword and fight the dragon. Makes me cross. So that's largely what I've been doing, looking at new things and disapproving at them.
Mike, what have you been playing?
Well, sort of connecting with that, and as you mentioned last week, Saints Row 4.
Oh, an excellent game.
Which, of course, does rather pick up on the whole virtual reality style thing. And as you say, buggy, in fact, in a way, I think that the setting works for it, because, I mean, I was in some sort of a, you know, one of these random flashpoints where a load of things turned up, and everything that was coming towards me was upside down, and I couldn't tell if that's just because it's so crazy and bizarre and that's the kind of thing that happens, or if it's an actual glitch. But, like, cars seem to be, their wheels were on the ground but then the bodies were upside down.
No, I think it was meant to be that, because
yeah,
later on in the game, when you're destabilising the simulation, you get stuff like all the character models get deformed and things.
That's clever.
So yeah, ingeniously, yeah, They've made it that you can't really tell the difference between a bug in the game and a deliberate design decision.
That's design genius. Absolutely.
There's a load of people on YouTube, of course, who put game fails up, which is just games going wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And there was the Need for Speed game that Criterion did, had these really, really arty, silly videos before each race that everyone just ignored because they were all rubbish. But somebody posted one of those. It was obviously meant to be. All the cars were flying around and stuff. And, yeah. Somebody actually thought that a bug in the cutscene had got all the way through into production, and they thought it was a bug, so reported it. It was fantastic. So, have you finished?
No, only about 30% through, I think. Although I can't tell if that's 30% of the main story or 30% of everything you ever do in the history.
Everything ever,
of
which
time.
Is a lot of stuff, of course.
Because I do tend to ignore the main plot and sort of only move that on when you absolutely have to, and then run off around the rest of the city and do a load of other stuff.
So which of the special missions have you done so far? Which games have been riffed on?
The main riff so far is just the Mass Effect from the ship. I haven't actually done many others that I'm sure some others have picked up stuff that just doesn't ring a bell. Because, yeah, I can't wait for some of the spoofs that kick in.
Yeah, the Metal Gear Solid one is my favourite.
That did sound fantastic.
And also the beat-em-up. Well, I hate beat-em-ups usually, but
yeah, that's sort of really, because I used to love the old arcade. Was it Streets of Rage or Final Boss Fight? Hit people with sticks, things. There were so many of them, but
Golden Axe, that's my favourite.
Oh, Golden Axe, yes.
That's getting rebooted. That's going to be a new Golden Axe.
Yeah. It already had been rebooted, I think. There was something to the N64 or something.
Bit like comic characters.
Yeah. The reboot.
So, yes, I think the virtual reality nature of Saints Row 4 really helps it out. So unlike Guild Wars, where it absolutely wrecks immersion and everything.
It just makes no sense.
I mean, Saints Row 3, the storyline never really worked because they were trying to be simultaneously a street gang and also a mega empire media brand thing. But then you turn up in a new city and have to work your way up from scratch, which... I mean, it didn't make sense, which doesn't matter, because nothing has to make sense.
When you arrive at that city, there are already many, many branches of Planet Saints on the streets.
Which you don't own.
Yes. So it was all terribly inconsistent. Not that it really mattered, because you just did stupid stuff anyway. Yeah. But the fact that now there's actually a plot explanation for nothing making sense. I'm rather enjoying that.
I do need to get that myself, yeah.
It's odd. The start of that game is one of the best starts to any game I think I've played this year. I mentioned it before, but the moment it kicks in with the Aerosmith, and everyone's obviously going to die, and everyone's saying how much they're going to miss you.
Oh, and, yes.
Yeah, and then you disarm a nuclear missile in air. It's fantastic. Yeah, it's weird, really. It does feel small. But then again, I've got loads of content they haven't done yet, so it's not that small.
Are they setting up for the inevitable chain of DLC as well, do you think?
Yeah, one of the DLCs for this one is the DLC they delayed from the last one to turn it into a full-blown game.
Yes, the original thing that it was going to be before it wasn't, and then it's going to be again.
Yeah.
Right.
It's all very confusing.
Plenty more to do there, then.
Have you spent most of your time collecting things from rooftops?
That's one reason why it takes an awfully long time, because you get your mission, and you go, right, go over there, and then while you're going over there, you go, ooh, look, glowing blue things, and go from roof to roof to roof to roof, yes.
Yeah. You've never played Crackdown, have you, it being an Xbox game?
No, the whole glowing blue things did seem...
Yeah, you all collected. Like it's very much like that. I recommend you don't play Crackdown if you get addicted to these.
Was that magazine that had a little thingy on the front that played the sound from the orbs?
Ah, yeah, I call that magazine special.
It's a little thing that played sounds, and you could just put that on top of a bookshelf and then pounce on it or something.
Yeah, I don't buy the magazines normally because they're usually rubbish. That thing kept me amused in the office for a long time until the battery ran out. Actually, until it started going off randomly, then it just got really annoying. I have been having trouble with Libya.
Ah, well, yes, aren't we all?
It does happen.
Yeah. He said, neatly segueing into a new game.
Tell us what you've been doing, John.
Yes, Libya. Unfortunately, they've hunkered down, and I can't quite take them over. Mm. I'm, of course, talking about Rome 2, Total War, which is a fantastic game. The AI is stupid. I've had two defending city events now where the AI has just run off to one of the corners because the pathfinding is broken.
Oh, where's it going? I don't know, sir. It appears to be running off to the beach and just standing there.
It's a city on the coast that's got a harbour in it, and they think they can get around and come up through the harbour, but they can't.
There's a wall in the way or something.
Yeah. Oh, so I just put archers on, well, spearmen on the walls and kill them all off.
Yeah, I'm always torn in Total War games when you defend against massive odds, you're basically using a glitch, and you're torn between go, I'm a military genius, and go, I shouldn't really do that, should I?
My military tactical genius at the moment is my patented Wall of Cavalry.
Ah.
Cavalry wall?
Yeah, well, you just get enough cavalry, and then you just march it straight in, and anything will fall apart.
Okay. just trampled under hoof.
Yeah. Because the cavalry is the only thing really fast enough to do what I want. Otherwise, I'm just waiting for people to trudge across the battlefield.
Superior mobility.
Yeah. And also, it helps if you have some spearmen to back them up from a distance. It's good. I like it. I'm starting... It's still my first game, so I've only been playing for many, many hours. And I started as Rome, of course, because it's always the easiest one. And just cleaning up around the Mediterranean at the moment.
Yeah, I did try Total War, the first one, and I just really didn't click at all. I just something conceptually about it. I found it to be very, very paper, scissors, stone. And I just felt like I was trying to juggle the whole time.
You're
three different sorts of unit, and you have to use the right one against the other right one that the enemy brings against you. And if you get the sort of juggling wrong, you drop a ball, as it were, then suddenly it all falls apart. And I just found that so irritating and fiddly that I just sort of bounced off the whole game very early on into like the first or second battle or something.
Well, my advice is to research really good cavalry really early.
Had I just not got to the "this unit beats everything" stage?
Yeah. Tanks.
I didn't check up quick enough, yeah.
Yeah,
it's a shame because it seems like quite an expansive and sort of well detailed
series. It is. Again, it's very buggy. Although I had this horrible crash yesterday, I was convinced I was going to lose my entire campaign, but I didn't.
Regular saves.
Yeah. And my biggest problem at the moment, of course, is the Libya problem, because I need to take out their last city, but one of my allies has been sieging this city for the last 20 turns, and I'm thinking I might have to kill the ally first so I can go off and kill the Libyans.
Get out of the way, give it here.
Let me do it properly. Yeah, and the other problem, of course, is I've got the entirety of Europe and North Africa to invade, and it's going to take me a while.
Busy, busy, busy.
Especially as you only have so many armies, and you start raising too many armies, and then you can't afford them, which is the usual Total War problem.
Yeah, and once you get into that kind of mid-period where you've got a fairly big empire, and in order to attack someone you have to shift all your units around, and then you strip everything out to go and attack someone, and then someone attacks you that you weren't expecting, and you have to shift everyone back in, or you leave everyone garrisoned, which costs you too much money, and yeah, you kind of have that awkward period often, don't you?
Yeah.
Where there's a lot of micromanagement and shuffling before you can actually get on to.
I think the only solution is for me to systematically clear out every other nation on the planet.
Kill everyone, that'll do it.
I got an achievement for taking too many slaves, and I got an achievement for killing too many people after battles. God, there's too many achievements. Okay.
I have this problem in RTSs in general. I wonder if you two learned tacticians can suggest some advice. It's not a game-specific one, but in sort of generic terms. You have an empire and you have an army and you're building up, and to your left is neighbour A, and to your right is neighbour B, and they're both building up and will attack you. Now, how do you conquer neighbour A without neighbour B suddenly coming in behind and completely decimating everything?
Diplomacy. You can start...
Do you have to storm one of your neighbours?
Yeah, basically. Fashion?
Yeah, I mean, depending on the engines and things, if you've got the options to get one of the two neighbours as an ally and then sort of suggest, perhaps... I mean, the perfect way...
I always fall into this trap. I'll build up and then throw everything at neighbour A because I want to make sure I beat them, and then there's nothing left to defend when neighbour B obviously charges in. And I'm sure a lot of the AI looks for this and exploits it against me as well in the various games. Sins of a Solar Empire was what the last time this happened to me, and I got so ragey I stopped playing and got quite cross. But so it says a sort of generic way, best practice for that sort of situation. That would be good.
I mean, the perfect thing is if you can trick neighbours A and B into attacking each other, and then support the one of them that looks easiest to attack in the meantime. Yeah. But that it depends very much on what diplomacy options are available and how sophisticated they are.
But basically, you have to try and put off the inevitable backstab from B as long as possible until you're ready to cope with it, I suppose.
Or if you can, mass enough stupidly powerful units, just attack them both at the same time and crash them all.
I've been doing it with trade agreements because I figure that maybe the AI is clever enough to realise that trade's better than war. It doesn't help them in the long term. Because they still end up with a city, which I quite like the look of.
I mean, I haven't played it myself, but I think there's a PC gamer write-up of, I think, Crusader Kings with the Game of Thrones mod that sounds like great fun, because then it all gets into, you marry your family off to other people, or get them married into you. So you have, massive, carefully constructed allegiances.
That game's been sitting on my Steam catalogue for a little while now, but I'm too scared to start it. It looks fantastic, but it looks like it's going to eat all of my time. And I say that as somebody who's wasting all their time on a Total War game at the moment. So, Tim, Wales.
Oh, I'm going to talk about Guild Wars 1. Yes,
wow.
More Guild Wars.
Still going.
No, this is last night, in fact. I'm playing Guild Wars 1 again, and there was the whole wind of change. Guild Wars Beyond, the last gasp of content that we'll ever see for the first game. And I played my way through it, and we got to the end, and it gives you a new hero. And that's quite an important thing, the new AI henchmen and things that you can slot into your party. This one was an assassin, and it all tied up the end of the story. It was a big heroic arena fight with the Minister Rako, the power-mad Ministry of Purity top bod, and I managed to do it, and it was quite satisfying. And it turns out there's a sort of do the entire 35 mission chain in hard mode option available, and you can do that simultaneously to normal mode as well, and in fact do it in hard mode and not bother with normal mode if you like. And I thought, oh god, yeah, okay, that's something I could chip away at. But then I looked on the wiki and I learned that you get a different hero at the end of it. And it's a ritualist hero, and that's a fantastically useful and powerful thing to have in your repertoire. Ritualists are basically the turret spammers of the piece, and if you can slot three of them into your uber seven man hero team, there's pretty much nothing you can't destroy.
Does it become whatever. Tower defense then?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, playing as and with ritualists, it's very much about setting up shop, going and plinking them and bringing them back to you. And regular long time Guild Wars compadre multi there is a ranger, who they're fantastic at pulling, but obviously if they just pull back to themselves they'll get murdered. So a large ritualist backline with a ranger pulling is fantastic, and I just sort of tend to supervise and shout inspirational morale advice even though I'm not a paragon. But it turned out that there's still more to do with the Winds of Change, and that's good, because I love more things to do in Guild Wars 1. And the Winds of Change thing is basically, it's quite hard to start with, and then the hard mode variant bumps the level of everything up. Remember, as a character, you'll never get above level 20 in Guild Wars. That's the cap. And the hard mode Wind of Change is starting to throw level 28 to 32s at you. I think I saw a 32 for the first time ever, and I've been playing it for about 6 years. Last night, that was insane. And it's so the Wind of Change storyline basically has you going around clearing up after the main faction storyline, and it sends you to each and every faction's zone in the game to do a bit of clear-up. And that's fine for the majority of it, but then it sends you back to the starter island in hard mode, where you're only allowed four members of your party. It's a game largely balanced around eight, and it's still throwing levels sort of 28 to 32 at you. And it's me and Multi, and normally we've got this fantastically super efficient and largely it doesn't need a lot of supervision set of six heroes who will just run in and do it all, as long as we can pull and target mark correctly. Anyway, suddenly we're stripped down to two extras were allowed, and then the other half of the party has to be us doing some real work for a change.
Couldn't you not be in the party and just use NPCs?
I'd rather forgotten how to play it as an actual MMO. I tend to normally play it as something of an RTS these days, with the heroes and the flags and everything. But suddenly we're in this uber hard zone. It's the rescue at Minister Cho's estate, which is about seven missions into the 35 mission story chain in hard mode. And, you know, I was sort of dreading it because I remembered it from the first time through, and it absolutely kicked my arse in normal mode. But, you know, a bit of perseverance and wikiing, and I managed to get through it. And we tried it in hard mode last night, and it was quite possibly the most intensely difficult Guild Wars I've ever played. And I'm talking, including, like, the realm of Fisher of Woe and the Underworld and all the endgame raid stuff. It was insane! We must have spent about 2 hours in there carefully pulling groups of four afflicted. And the trouble is that they're super afflicted they've taken the very best meta builds from the PvP circuit and just given them to the monsters.
That's cheating. I know,
it's really unfair because I don't like PvP because they're better at me anyway, so I hide in PvE because it's a lot easier. No. They brought all those builds across. So they're basically the typical PvE rampaging group will involve a lot of minions, a lot of undead monsters as from the necromancer class, and a lot of spirits from the ritualist class as a sort of turret back row. So you have about 25 to 30 entities on your party steaming through groups of sort of four or five enemies, and usually that's quite satisfyingly effective. But they've got skills that steal the minions from us and change them into enemies, which is really quite startling when that happens to you the first time. It's like, why are they all attacking us? Go that way, enemies. And skills that destroy spirits within one hit and so on, and it's all very hard work. Anyway, so we did the first mission of the Winds of Change hard mode and totally wiped, and then didn't bother looking at it again for about a year. But now we're back doing it and sort of slowly working through it. And the trick is to go to the wiki and learn what actually each of these afflicted monsters do, because they've all got unexpected and different skill bars. It's the necromancers that are the healers, that threw me. So they're just burning away the monks and just dying like left, right and centre. The monks are actually smiting, doing damage and stuff. It's crazy. But anyway, yeah, so four of us against groups of four afflicted that are about eight or nine levels higher than us and all have top-notch, proven PvP builds. It was really quite harsh. But we cheated a bit. We managed to... First of all, summoning stones. They let you bring in a sort of level 20 extra member of the team for a set duration. So we burned through a whole load of those that we've been collecting for like every winter event for the last 10 years. And then also concepts, a huge amount of consumable buff items that require whole skill points to use. It was just insane the amount of prep we had to do for this thing. And then a very hairy, painstaking... Yeah, we're sort of getting on to one in the morning, and any time any of the NPCs we're supposed to be rescuing dies, you have to go back to the start and do the whole thing again. So by the time we got to the third one, where they're all clustering around, and we aggroed the group surrounding it, and then the NPC decides to join in and help. And these NPCs are geared for normal mode, not hard mode. They don't get any buffing. It's like, oh god, no, no. We're just like throwing ourselves in front of the monsters. Don't hurt the peasant. Hit me, hit me. Yeah. Oh god, I'm dying. It's fine, as long as the peasant survives. It was crazy. Yeah, really intense stuff, but we did it, we got through. So hopefully going forward from here for the remaining god knows how many missions, the group size goes back up a bit and we can start to bring our uber hero builds in a bit more. But yes, some frankly far too much hard work for a game of its age, to be honest, but enjoying it a lot, still pushing through there. Yeah. But it's all to get this Ritualist Hero at the end of it all. It'd be fantastic. Mind you, by the time we get that Ritualist Hero, we'll have completed the most difficult content available in the game, so I probably won't need them. Hey-ho. So I've been doing a bit of Guild Wars 1 over the last day or two, and it's been nearly killing me.
So is there any content left you won't have done after that?
Well, there's the Fissure of Woe, Domain of Anguish, all the sort of you need to pay a platinum even to go and look at this end game raid that we need to have a look at. And some of those, over the years, people have developed some quite efficient solo builds, solo plus AI type builds for those. And you can use those to farm bits for elaborate cosmetic armour and so on. But we're sort of getting to the point, I think some of there's two very obscure 12-man instances in there that I don't think we're ever going to get enough people for. But on the whole, I think, yeah, we've got to get to the point where, I don't know, I'm always finding more stuff in there to do. Stuff that we didn't see the first time through, or these stupid out there titles like exploration and skill hunting and so on. So I don't know, there's always a reason to carry on playing it, I think, which is good. I'm enjoying it.
Have you finished filling in your map yet?
No, that's going to be a thing of many, many years, I think. No, I don't know. It's something I've been trying to sort of chip away, do a little half hour here and there each night before I go off and play my actual game of that night. You know, it's got to put the hours in, but certainly getting there. I'm up to about 98.7 or something on Ilona, but it's just these little triangles in the middle of nowhere everywhere that I'm going to have to keep going off and visiting. But I'll get there. It's not technically difficult, it's just putting the hours in, I think.
Mike?
Well, I've been playing a bit of War Thunder, as I have for the past, well, many months now. But
you seem rather addicted to that game.
Well, it's like usually... Guides and everything. It's crazy. It's usually just sort of... do a couple of battles a night, and that's fine and stuff. But they've just put a summer event in there, and it's possibly a good job you're not playing there, Tim, because the requirements to completely complete it are a bit harsh. There's they're giving away five planes.
They're giving away some free stuff for a very long grind activity, are they?
That's the one.
I can't resist.
And so, of course,
being with a rather tight time limit.
They've been quite generous. Their events are often very short. They're not even a full day sometimes, like 8 hours. But this particular one is 3 weeks, which is good because for one plane from one nation, you have to shoot down 1,100 opponents.
That's... I'm no mathematician, but that's a large number.
It's a lot. I mean, there's three different modes. There's arcade, historical battles, and full real battles. And they have toned down the number required in each, which is fortunate, because arcades are sort of big scrums, but full real battles, you know, it's much, much edgier.
I've just done some quick maths with my handy-dandy smartphone. 52.3 kills per day for three weeks.
That's it, yes.
Okay, I know.
And, In arcade,
by 24, you need to be killing 2.1 fools an hour.
Yes,
and not sleep or eat or go to work.
Because you see, in arcade mode, I mean, I've been doing. I feel kind of bad because you do the old seal clubbing thing. You dig out your starter planes and go back to fight against low level opponents.
Oh, you're farming the noobs.
Sort of
a bit.
That's
reprehensible.
But then I think lots of other people are doing the same.
There are the noobs in there. You're farming to farm noobs.
Yes, farming.
This is a bad time to be a noob.
Yeah, I wouldn't start playing just at the moment, probably. Right. And I think I can sort of get about 10 kills in a 10-minute game on a fairly reasonable game. So sort of approximately a kill a minute, like you say, you need about 50 a day. So you can probably do it with an hour a day, but that's very much ideal conditions and never missing a single day and everything. I mean,
well, yeah, that puts my ice skating once a day for 25 days to shame.
And then that's for one plane. I mean, that's for the Russian ones. The Russian and American planes aren't normally available. I think they're special ones they've only given away as gifts and things before. So they're the really high 1,100 kills. I think for a Typhoon 1B, it's a mere 560 or so.
Oh, right.
So have you got one yet?
Entirely.
I've got one because I bought one in a steam pack seat. So that's why I'm doing the Russians at the moment.
Are these planes cosmetics only, or do they have actual better stats and things?
It's very much like World of Tanks, in that a premium plane is comparable to a normal plane of the same level, but you earn a bit more experience and a bit more of the in-game money when you use it. So, performance-wise, I mean, they're effectively like this. The British Typhoon 1B late you buy normally in the game, and the 1B early, which about the only difference is it's got bombs and can't fit rockets, is the premium one. So, sort of very similar, but slight boosts and things. So,
So are you going for it, or are you just going to sort of play and see how it goes?
I'm sort of tinkering a lot. I don't think it's going to be. Fun. Like I say, a couple of battles a night, fine. I think dedicating my next 3 weeks solidly to it's a bit much. So.
Well, that's it. It's the day after day of it that got to me with the Star Trek stuff. So if they'd have done that over like 3 months or something, or maybe sort of a third of the days you need to hit, then mind you, just seeing how many of the super duper Christmas spaceships were there afterwards that people were using, loads of people bought into that, proving that it's not just me.
You're all crazy.
I guess it'll be interesting to see how many people are flying those planes around after the event.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, because some of them are available, like they've recently got greenlit on Steam, and so the Typhoon's available in I think,
Steam, get them by other means.
Ace Advance Pack or something, which is quite a good deal for the amount of in-game currency you get. So there's an awful lot of those at the same time anyway. But yeah, the American, I think, A26C, it'll be interesting how many of those turn up, because that's only been available, I think, as gifts before. It's fun to play normally, but
so it's sort of more of a sort of drop-in thing for you. Quick 10 minutes here, there. You don't have the sort of larger raid progression, best gear in slot, or whatever the hell.
It doesn't seem to have at the moment a competitive, because World of Tanks, I mean, they call them clan wars, where there's actually, I think, because I never seriously got into it, there's a sort of global map of territory, and you and your clan can fight another clan to claim a piece of territory, and that earns you.
So sort of support for sort of larger guild type.
I mean, it sounded like that got, you know, obviously crazy competitive and over massive tier 10.
Alarm clock ops, all that.
Yeah, so never particularly touched that. And there doesn't really seem to have been an equivalent in War Thunder yet, although they are adding. It's planes at the moment, and they are adding tanks and ships over time. And there's talk of a World War mode that might somehow tie everything in together and perhaps give a bit more of an overarching metagame. So,
interesting. So, because I know World of Tanks are—they're pushing their plane thing.
Yes, and
coming soon.
Conversely, World of Tanks have got World of Warplanes linking in, and World of Battleships or World of Ships, World of Warships, one of that lot. World of Warplanes is September the 26th.
Okay.
It's going. It's releasing as much as any of these things ever.
So, War Thunder's got quite a lot of headway on that already, and established player base and everything, but it'd be interesting to see compare and contrast when the two broadly similar games are available.
I've sort of got a post up on Kiesa, which is my impressions of the two, and World of Warplanes doesn't really do it for me at the moment. It's very much drop-in arcadey. It doesn't.
Have we seen beta stuff, reports and things yet?
It went from closed beta to open beta a little while back, and then they're off to release on the 26th. I think what World of Warplanes does have is World of Tanks has a colossal player base. It is, I mean, you see all of these, you know, revenues for free-to-play games and stuff, and World of Tanks is, you know... I think Wargaming have bought everyone now, haven't they? Any studio that comes up for sale, Wargaming.net seem to be able to buy.
Yeah, they have so much money now, it's harder not to buy something.
I see lots of derisory articles about the gold ammo and everything, but that must really work for them if they've got that kind of investment capital.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've moved... one of the things they did was they let you buy gold ammo with the normal in-game currency. They did a whole thing about, you know, we're not play to win. No, not pay to win, we're play to win.
But I imagine they've set it up in such a fashion that it's just really not worth the time and the effort it takes to do it via in-game. Usually that's my experience with these. I tend to go for that just because I'm stubborn, but, you know, it generally is very obvious that you could save yourself like hours and hours and hours of gameplay and just give them £5 or something.
Yeah, I mean, both War Thunder and
technically free to play, but
yeah, World of Tanks. But I mean, the thing, the progression is very much tied in that yes, it's going to take you an incredibly long time if you don't give them any money either for premium accounts or, you know,
it depends on your perspective, though. I mean, the idea that a game I'm enjoying is made shorter by me giving them money seems like a bad thing to me. I want to play this game for lots, let's do it the slow way because I'm enjoying the journey there, I suppose. That's how I tend to look at it, anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, what I find is that the kind of mid-range fights actually tend to be more fun, because as soon as you get to certainly World of Tanks, you know, the upper tiers, everyone's got these massive, hugely expensive, all quite cautious.
Yeah, the top end of World of Tanks being a very serious place.
Yes, whereas, you know, the mid-range, yeah, everyone just goes, hey, I'm in a really fast tank, woo! likewise, World of Warplanes, War Thunder, possibly World of Warplanes it'll apply to as well, but some of the most fun you can have is to go back to the early starting biplanes and just, you know, have this crazy dogfight, everyone's in little biplane, rather than getting everyone's, you know, obsessed in War Thunder, it's getting up to jets, which, you know, the late war German Messerschmitt 262 and things are, you know, the end game there.
Okay.
Which obviously go a lot faster than your conventional.
And it's all about precision, and you know within like 3 or 4 mouse clicks if you've lost the battle because you haven't done it the prescribed correct way, that sort of thing.
There's, you know, obviously pilots go, I think there's a stat from actual military stuff, or wars, as they're sometimes called.
Wars.
Mm-hmm. the actual numbers will vary, but it's something like 90% of air kills were from 10%. I mean, it might be the old 80-20 rule, you know.
Yeah.
But you have the certain aces who are just ludicrously good, and certainly German ones, you know, were racking up 400-500 kills. And when you think of the number of people involved, that's obviously going to therefore mean there's an awful lot of people flying around who got one or even no kills, who are just
shot down on their first time out or whatever. Yeah,
yeah. And so if you sort Fatally. Of translate that into, if you make it too realistic and it does step up to full real mode, I think probably player skills give you such a massive advantage.
Some people are just unbelievably much better in all forms of PvP than the average player. And something I find in PlanetSide a lot, you know, I'm always swearing at, you know, PlanetSide 2, just swearing at the screen, and sometimes not even swearing, I'm just so stunned by the incredulity. How the hell did this player do this? Yeah, and they're repeatedly just killing you over and over and over to say these really elaborate techniques, and they've just made a game of how easy it is for themselves, and you just, that sort of thing really gets to me. But yeah, some people are just genuinely that much better, and it's a difficult thing to come to terms with, I suppose, certainly in any PvP.
I mean, I've seen a couple of PlanetSide videos on YouTube, and the people in the comments will be going, lol, aimbot. And obviously it's really hard to tell, but there's a massive thread going on where the person who posted it is just saying, look, no, I've been playing first-person shooters for the past, you know, however long, 10, 20 years. Basically, I can snap on and aim two people's heads almost as fast as an actual aimbot. you know, yeah, you have no chance against that. You're going to be killed.
You can wear a hat.
Some form of helmet, surely.
I believe this is why Team Fortress 2 is obsessed with hats.
That's what's become the Advanced Hat Simulator. And that sort of ties in, I suppose, with the fact that PlanetSide 2 has introduced player-made content, hasn't it?
We were looking at some of that on our Friday little session there. We were sort of skimming through the shop stuff. So far, it's mostly in the decals section. We've not seen... Decals and camo. We haven't seen... we saw one hood ornament. Yay! A3D thing someone had made and had approved.
What was it?
It was like a little cyclone tornado that sits on top of the radiator cap there. It may look quite good, actually. All things, in all fairness.
Do future space tanks have radiator caps like that?
I don't know. Yeah, apparently so, yes. And a lot of future nanite-powered dune buggies sound like they've got diesel engines.
Well, I think that the radiator caps where you have to pull the nanites in, isn't it? But, so War Thunder, two thumbs up. Unless you're insane and trying to grind everything. Over to you, John.
Well, I've actually been tempted to start War Thunder, because I downloaded it a while ago. Now I'm not going to.
Give it 3 weeks, and then, come enough of that, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about consoles. Because the new consoles come out soon.
Oh.
And I've decided I should be excited, but I'm not.
Why not? You're quite an avid tech head, on new developments and so on. So what are we looking at? We're looking at essentially the PS4 and the Xbox One, whatever they're calling it.
Yes, which is part of this weird Microsoft.
Is there a Nintendo offering for this generation?
Yeah, it was the Wii U.
Oh, the Wii U's been gone.
It's out already, no one bought them.
But it has actually... because I've been looking at what each console will do, and Microsoft finally answered my question as to which console I was going to get first this week. The one I'm going to get first is the Xbox.
Okay.
Ooh. It's out first.
You made a decision. Was that it?
Yeah.
So in essence, your stance is I'll just buy whatever comes out when it comes out.
Yeah.
Okay, you'll be getting a PS4 as well.
Yeah, a week later. It's a busy week.
That's so cheesy.
Xbox on Friday, Saturday's a Doctor Who, and then next Friday is the PS4.
So why do you feel that you need to buy two devices which essentially to the layman cost the same and do the same job?
Because
is it purely the games line?
Yeah, it's the exclusive games. Like, I need an Xbox because of Forza and Dead Rising, and I need the PS4.
Are we looking at another generation of very competitive exclusivity?
It's going to have to be.
You're going to have to buy both boxes if you want all the games you like.
Well, the problem is all the multi-platform games I'm going to be buying on PC because it's superior in every single way, apart from the fact that multiplayer never works. So I'm just down to the exclusive stuff, and so it's the exclusive games and any exclusive content that comes along.
There's quite a few PS titles exclusives that I thought I'd like to play. I mean, I'm only a 360 owner, but stuff like Flower and Shadow of the Colossus, there's some really quite high
Heavy
quality.
Rain. There's been some really...
Some stuff I'd really liked to have been able to play, but just couldn't justify going out and buying a PS3 as well.
Well, see, everyone ended up with a PS3 because Sony did the fantastic wit. Something that's really bugging me at the moment is people complaining that Microsoft are pushing the console as more than just games, when Sony did exactly the same thing with the PS3, because it still happens to be the best Blu-ray player. And so everyone bought it because it had a Blu-ray player as well.
It's your unique selling points and your value add, isn't it? Anything else you can make your box do will definitely sway, well, particularly parent pester power, that sort of thing. Yes, it's a games machine, but if it plays movies, or if you can surf the internet or do whatever with it as well, if it becomes more of a family device, you can start to justify a bit of a spend there because it becomes more useful to more members of the family or whatever.
Yeah, and this generation of consoles is going to have Blu-ray on both of them, so they're all going to be proper media devices, although CD support's gone now. They've dropped the ability to rip CDs to consoles.
I still mourn the loss of the A drive, to be honest. The latest PC I bought, the bundle, it didn't have a CD player. It didn't have a DVD CD drive.
No,
I had to go and bend in PC World and buy one specially.
I had to rip the Blu-ray drive out of my old PC.
But how do I get the datas onto the box? It's me bashing the lid with a CD in 2001 style.
I've only used three things on the CD drive on my computer. One, installed the damn computer, putting the operating system on.
Yeah.
Also, The Saboteur, the copy I've got, is on disk, and also my copy of Halo 2 PC is on disk. That's the only thing I've used it for. Everything else has been downloaded.
Yeah, I can't remember the last... I bought something, and then you put the CD in and it goes off and sort of it's a 10k file which has a key for Steam and then goes, right, I'm going to download the game now. Can I just put the disc in? No, 43 megabytes, gigabytes.
Shocking and decadent about using 10k of a CD.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
They'll just type that in from a listing or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. This is the way that physical media died. And no one seems to mourn.
There was a time in the sort of very early 2000s when I'd use a CD to install an MMO and then have the patcher completely replace every single thing that the CD had put on the drive. So, I've got an original EVE Online CD somewhere, and then installing from that was always humorous.
I was playing the last Need for Speed game on PS3 because I've got PlayStation Plus. It throws games at me every month, free ones.
I see you bitching on Twitter about patching a lot.
Yeah, and that one was a good one. It was a 4 gig download for the game, then a 2 gig patch. Half of the game had changed.
Wow.
And yes, the swearing on Twitter was the fact that it made me download a patch and didn't give me the patched version to start with. This stupid
thing.
That would
be nice.
Yeah. There's nothing quite like...
apply the patch, then put the blinking thing up on.
And of course, it's a PS3, so when you do the patch in a game... it can't be done in the background. So your lovely media servant jobby can't do anything except for download a couple of gig of data.
So what's your title that's sold the platform to you? There's always one particular game that's so good people will go out and buy a platform just to be able to play the game. I mean, I've done it with PCs in the past.
Well,
which particular thing has made you go, right, I'm having an Xbox One and I'm going to play X?
The Xbox is Forza and Dead Rising 3.
Dead Rising 3 and Forza?
Yeah, because I really do like Dead Rising games. Although, for some reason, I realised I didn't really play the second one as much as I should have.
So maybe I don't
like Dead Rising. Maybe I just think I like Dead Rising.
Like the idea of Dead Rising.
Done some sort of mental karate on yourself, haven't you?
Yeah. And the PS4 is a bit more difficult because the launch lineup is a bit rubbish.
But you're confident enough there will be some.
Well,
there's
a game coming out early next year, the new Infamous game.
Okay.
And so that'll be good, so. But in the meantime. There's also stuff like there's the Vita support on the PS4, which will be interesting. And I did actually this week go out and buy a Vita.
Is that just to use the Vita support on the PS4?
Well, no. Again, it's PlayStation Plus. I was going through looking at all the games I had on PlayStation. Because I finally got unlimited downloads on my internet, so I was downloading everything I could.
So you can now feasibly support a PS3.
Yeah, and so I was downloading all the PS3 games, and all of the PS3 games I get free each month also means I get a bunch of PlayStation Vita games. And I realised I had an awful lot of good PlayStation Vita games that I wasn't able to play. So I went out and bought myself a Vita, because there's a quite decent bundle with 10 games, a couple of them being decent.
So Vita's the little handheld jobber that has the online to download all the software onto it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it also...
I remember us mocking it a long time ago.
Well, yeah, it's because...
I don't know how it stands nowadays.
Well, it's still very mock-worthy, because they still charge a small fortune for the proprietary memory for it, and it's typical Sony. But the game I've been playing on that quite a lot is Assassin's Creed Liberation, which is an interesting game set in New Orleans and places, and it makes a brave racial choice by making the lead character French. Yes, she's another assassin running around dealing with slave owners and stuff, and it is really good actually. It works well on a handheld. Okay, it doesn't look quite as good as the others, but the Vita's got twin sticks, so it's controllable, and it's actually quite fun. I was quite surprised. There's a rumour that it's coming out for the other consoles now, and the PlayStation 4 and 3 version of Assassin's Creed 4 is going to have some exclusive download content, which is her again.
All right.
So I might have to get that on PlayStation.
See, I think that's the way I'd prefer it to go, is not have platform exclusives, but have exclusive DLC per platform. You know, have different accents and twiddly bit for each thing, but just don't stop people from not playing it at all.
I never mind timed exclusive too much, because, I mean, the PC, all traditionally, you'd have... I mean, Mass Effect 1 was probably sort of one of the cases in point where the Xbox version came out and sort of 6 months or a year later there was the PC version, and that was always, ooh, piracy, yes. I never minded timed exclusives too much, but whether that they just don't have the power then, because, I mean, Red Dead Redemption's never even made it to PC.
No, they've not been very good at their PC ports. Their PC ports have been a bit shoddy. I was playing quite a lot of GTA 4, and that... yeah, that has performance issues.
Needed major hardware, didn't it?
Yeah.
So
It's a time resources thing. Although Rockstar now, of course, have a dedicated team to do PC ports, apparently, which still means that maybe they should get around to announce GTA 5 on PC.
Well, yeah, because there's the whole mystery over it, isn't there? Again, I presume it's all tied in with exclusivity and stuff, so that they can say it's you know, exclusive to XYZ, and then a while later go, oh, and PC, yeah. Well, I don't know if have consoles ever done, you know, the Xbox will get it and then a year later.
Microsoft, or was it Sony? One of them is a bit dickish with not liking that and not allowing it.
Mm.
But I believe those policies are all changing now. But yeah, it's like Mass Effect 2, where it came out on the Xbox and PC first and then came later onto the PlayStation, and that was a big fuss because obviously that deal finally ran out. Because there has to have been a deal behind that to stop it.
Yeah, yeah. But it's even getting into indie games, isn't it? I mean, I was reading on Rock Paper Shotgun, I can't remember any of the actual games in question, which is slightly irritating, but a well-received indie game. There's a follow-up, well, I don't know if it's a direct follow-up, but the same team are doing something else, which is now going to be PS4 exclusive,
yes,
isn't
this,
it?
Yes, this is the follow-up to Dear Esther.
That's the one, yes.
And, yeah, it's now not going to have a PC version.
Mm.
The bastards. But yeah, it's going to be a... Did you play Dear Esther?
No.
Well, I say play.
Experience.
It is a journey, not a... Yeah, it's a bit annoying that. Sony, of course, are going a bit nuts on the supporting indie games this year. In fact, when they did their Gamescom presentation, they sort of didn't mention much to do with big games, and it was all indie, which does... really feel a bit weird. I don't know if it changes the way games are going to be, or whether or not it gives a different opinion of the console, but it's good to see.
Well, I mean, yeah, embracing indie is good, but then, you know, tying in exclusive and things does seem to run rather contrary to the whole indie spirit.
With indie games, I can understand it a bit. You know, not doing a PC version is a bit weird, but... you know, small dev team, not many resources, going to do the one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just seems weird. If you've got a working PlayStation build, you've probably got a working PC build as well.
I'm sure what you're saying about, you know, Unity and things before, if depending on the environment, it's a case of, you know, a few twiddles to release a version rather than some serious porting
work. Yeah, you're not rewriting an engine, which is weird. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see if that does finally come out on PC afterwards. I suspect it will after a while.
Yeah, hopefully it'll just be a time thing again.
Yeah. But it does look really good. I've been desperately trying to remember what the game's called.
Fantastic research, yeah.
Yeah, well...
actually, there's a sketch on John Finnemore's Souvenir Programme about how Google on phones has spoiled pub conversations. You just spend hours speculating on which is the biggest city in the world, and that's all been ruined now.
It's trying to foster a culture of deliberate ignorance to make pub chat more interesting.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So, Mike, where do you stand on the upcoming consoles? Any of them pique your interest? Because what you're currently a Wii owner.
Well, yes, I mean, ever since, well, late 80s, I've been PC all the way. You know, I've never had SNES or Mega Drive or the original PlayStations, you know, skipped all of that. Picked up the Wii when it came out just because of, you know, the whole novelty of motion control.
That was quite a sensation at the time, though.
But I mean, yeah, all I've really used it for is A, the novelty of motion control, and B, Guitar Hero. I'm fairly sated on guitars and Rock Band, etc. So there's nothing massively compelling at the moment, I'd have to say, either Xbox One or PS4 wise. So I don't know.
I think I'm in a similar boat, having just sort of, you know, spent a bit of money on a new PC. I think I'm probably going to try and stick with that for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years or whatever.
But sometime you are going to have to buy a Blu-ray player.
Not necessarily. They do it all in triple ultraviolet 3 format thing now, don't
they? Don't get me started on ultraviolet.
You can watch it on Blu-rays, or you can have DVDs, or you can download it off the interwebs as well, apparently, onto devices which I don't have. So, I don't know. I might just give up watching films. I don't know.
Streaming on the PC.
Talking about that,
YouTube will do.
I got Star Trek Into Darkness this week, because it came out this week.
Mm.
And the iTunes version of that, which comes with it, has all the extras on, so you have to go there to get the commentary. And the commentary is fantastic. It's all picture-in-picture and diagrams and stuff. It's brilliant.
spend a bit of money on the production of the commentary.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, there's a big fuss for that, actually, because they spread out all of the extras over various things. Like, there isn't a commentary on the disc. You have to download the iTunes one.
Yeah. It was a bit like the DLC exclusive with different game providers.
Yeah. Oh, I hate that. Yeah. Different shops, different exclusives. The worst one was Sleeping Dogs.
Oh, yes.
Because with that, it was really hard to get the police and the crime levels up.
Mm.
But the one I got had the crime one, had a repeatable missions to do that. But I couldn't get the police one because it was time exclusive for a different shop, and it was really, really annoying.
So, yeah, it sounds like they're doing the same with films now. You get the commentary from one provider and some outtakes from another.
Yeah, it's just terrible. Disgraceful. It should stop.
Shops are obsolete. The Amazon All-Father will provide in the future.
Well, there's a big fuss with GTA 5, isn't there? They're not allowed to ship it early. It has to be shipped the day before it comes out, so people don't get it early, which means lots of people aren't going to get it on the right day.
Is this pre-release download unlock code nonsense again?
No. Sort of
connected, but yeah.
I own it. I'm just waiting for the activation key to be transmitted so I'm allowed to use my purchase.
Oh, rage. Saints Row 4, that was really annoying.
Mm.
In the end, I VPN'd over to America and unlocked it on the Tuesday instead of the Friday. Yeah.
So you're one step ahead of them. Fantastic.
So pointless, isn't it?
It's such a faff.
The best bit about the Saints Row one is there was no disc release for the PC version in this country.
Yeah, so you couldn't have gone on board.
It's a digital only.
Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, it was just insane.
Yeah.
Stupid games companies and stupidness.
I'm feeling old. Grumpy old man.
Yeah, everyone's going to get their GTA 5 a couple of days late because there's no way that the post office will be able to deliver everyone's in one day.
Bring the world's postal services to their knees.
Yeah.
Well, the post office have a hard time delivering stuff on time anyway.
Yeah.
Only a couple of days grace, yes.
It's all shocking. The world's, what's the world coming to? Yeah. What else have I played? I must have played more games. See, I don't have my whiteboard.
You were there.
I don't have my whiteboard
here. Whiteboard today, so it's all very ad hoc.
Yeah, we're not very good without a whiteboard.
Let me guess. You played some racing game, probably?
Oh, yes, Forza.
There you go.
Yeah.
They released a rewards website for Forza, which takes 2, 3, 4 and Forza Horizon, and various things in it gave you points, and then you go up different tiers and it gives you free stuff.
And what do points make?
In-game prizes.
Captain Achievement.
And so I had a look, and I was tier 4, because you know, I've done quite well in all of those games, but I realised I hadn't actually finished Forza 4. I must have got really bored, and I know exactly why I got really bored, because it wanted me to do a couple of laps of the full Le Mans circuit. And there's...
That's real time, is it?
Do you have to do a real time 24-hour race?
Not quite. There's only one thing worse than...
Laying in his supplies in his room. Like, that's the breakfast, that's dinner, that's tea there.
Swap drivers, 8-hour shift.
Large number of empty plastic containers. Yeah.
The annoying thing, of course, about Le Mans is those straights are too long. You zone
push
out
control.
And crash. Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not as bad as... Nürburgring, because that's actually too curvy.
Too curvy.
Yeah, you're doing too many turns.
It's quite big as well.
Yeah.
So you want to go straight then curved?
Yeah, they're both about 10-minute laps in.
Can't please you when it comes to race course design.
Oh, she can. actually, no, I had a problem on that. You put me on Silverstone, and I went off because I turned down the new circuit, which isn't in the game, and ended up in the gravel. I didn't realise I'd learnt the new circuit, and so basically you get there's some points for all the achievements, and then there's stuff for number of miles driven or challenges done or whatever, and so I'm working up to tier 5, which will give me a couple of million credits in each game. Unfortunately, to get those last points I need to get to tier 5, I think I'm going to have to spend a couple of million credits in each game.
So you'll get back the money you spent to get the thing.
It's interesting. There's coming up with Forza 5, there's going to be more stuff, so I thought I might as well try and get this leveled up a bit, finish off Forza 4, which I did. Last race was a couple of laps around Nürburgring, of course. And yeah, I should start fortifying with loads of cool stuff. And yeah, they saw me coming.
I think kind of thing can work. I mean, it's like the old Steam trading cards. The fact that they exist actually prompts you to go off and go, oh yeah, I mean, like Psychonauts. Until you realise that you can just leave it running in the background and get the cards anyway. Yeah.
Criticise, because that kind of mentality is essentially what I'm applying to Guild Wars 1 at the moment. You know, a series of pointless and very lengthy tasks which will get me virtually nothing that I find myself compelled to do anyway. So on you go, yeah.
I got unusually upset by Steam trading cards, because I came out of Total War, had a couple of them, and it just bugged me that they were there. Putting that update notification and filling up my inventory and...
Yes, I mean, the initial excitement has worn off slightly now, and I haven't even been sitting idling in whatever they have been doing.
I'm not sure what the gig is there. What are people working towards?
Arbitrary levels.
Making numbers go up.
It's just the levels, is it? Yeah. The collection, a collection of
cards. Well, once you create a badge, you also get money off other games.
Well, it's like 33% off something you were never going to buy anyway.
33% off something that's going to be 75% off if you wait for the
last exactly. Anyway. It's like we discussed last week. Number one rule of PC gaming is do not buy a game.
Do not buy full price on Steam.
It's the same as on PlayStation Plus. I wouldn't dream of buying certain games on PlayStation now, because I know they're going to give it to me for free after a while.
Yeah.
And it's not even years later. It could be 6 months later with some of them.
I should probably point out the Steam group we've got going at the moment. There's a discussion thread in there which is essentially sort of turned into a kind of a free game swap shop of sorts for surplus Steam inventory.
Quite a few people
have listed extra copies of things they appear to have gotten.
All of the old XCOM games.
So basically, free games for anyone who pipes up in the Steam group thread there, basically.
That's a good point.
I've got three copies of Guns of Icarus Online I'm submitting to the heap there. For
I think that's
else.
Going to PS4.
It's the same problem I have with like War Thunder and World of Tanks, is I just really don't get on with random pickup 8v8 PvP or 4v8. Basically, where I'm thrust into a team of random strangers I've never met and required to perform well as a team to beat some enemies.
Well, yes, because particularly in that, you have to work four of you together, right? Well, it's not even you've got...
You're not in individual boats. There are four of you on one sort of steampunky sky galleon thing, which admittedly are very cool. I'm very much looking forward to... They're talking about adding an adventure mode, which eventually will become some sort of MMO, which I'm looking forward to a lot, which is one of the reasons I went and bought a four-pack of licences for it, because I thought, well, you know, it'll help them with their goal there, because the idea of doing a proper game of steampunk skyships sounds brilliant. But what they've got there at the moment is essentially just a sort of pick-up group lobby matchmaking. So four of you end up on this sky galleon thing, and some of you are gunners, one of you is a captain, and one of you is an engineer. And the gunners have to run around the boat jumping into different turrets. There's like way more guns than gunners, so you have to keep leaping out and using the ones that are facing the enemy. Captain's supposed to use his telescope to spot enemies so that the gunners can see where to shoot them. There's a lot of big, thick cloud banks and stuff. And also the captain steers the boat and drives it around the sky arena. The engineer has to run around beating stuff with the spanner to try and repair things. There are various damaged locations like the engine.
Not sure spanners work that way.
Oh no, they're doing this.
Steampunk spanners.
Yeah, repair the engine. So you just go bang, 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 bang with this spanner, and you can buff the engines as well with a certain different sort of spanner. And the idea is that the four of you pull together and work as a team to make your boat awesome and efficient. And there's enemy boats coming in as well. I think sometimes it's 8v8. There are two boats on each side, that sort of thing. And in theory and on paper, it sounds brilliant. I had a good old go at it, but just the awkward and uncomfortableness of pickup group team PvP just put me off it a bit, really, which unfortunately is what happened with War Thunder and World of Tanks as well, which is otherwise fine games that I personally don't think are bad. I just have a real problem with myself. But anyway, I've got some... So there's some free games there I can dish out to whatever Steam accounts pipe up and say they want them.
I'm pretty sure I've got a Portal from the last Steam Summer event, but I think the entire world has Portals already, so...
But yeah, so I've had peruse of that thread in the Steam group. There might be some free stuff. And I guess badges count as that as well, if you've got the spare badges that you don't give a damn about in your inventory.
Well, you can at least do offline trading now, I think, because previously you both had to be on at the same time to do it, but now you can submit and accept offers.
I might
offline.
Just trade all of my cards to you.
I don't want them.
I don't want them.
I don't want them more.
Well, I've got four Defiance badges as well, which I somehow managed to gain whilst installing Defiance.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with and don't really want. So if anyone is missing a set there, I can turf those over as well.
But is anyone still doing anything with it? Or has everyone lost interest because they're pointless?
Nonsense.
Well, it was quite funny that there was massive speculation over, like, the summer curls and things, and people were buying up Skyrims because they were going to be immensely valuable. Oh, God.
Early I think the market's all
crashed down to about, like, 7p a card now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of Defiance, I just want to thank everyone for the impromptu competition that started happening on Twitter. Last week, listeners would have heard me not really knowing what the hell a BMG was in Defiance, and we had some fantastic entries there, some of which might even be the actual answer. It says biomedical gun, which sounds feasible. It does bio and medical things. Let's see, Teppo says BMG equals biomagnetic gun, and then links to the Defiance wiki as well, so, you know, that lends some credibility to it, but he could have just edited that page.
That's true. I wouldn't put it past him. He's tricky.
I'm going to award Diana Dial the win. Big menacing gun. I think so.
That sounds much better.
I'm going to go with that, yes. Which is even more cool than British Mountain Guide, which is what we thought it was. Yeah, still dabbling around in there. Some pretty hard story-based content in there. It seems best duoed through, and ideally with someone with a SMG and someone with a sniper rifle stroke BMG. That sort of takes the load off a bit. They're doing a lot with weird Volge invasions in there as well, which somehow seem to keep turning up on my mission objectives. I go, right, off to the star with my gun to do my thing and be a hero, and I get there and there's like giant super mech soldiers from outer space to tear us in around the place, and 30 or 40 players all running around going, ah, shooting stuff.
Oh, you mock me when that used to happen in a certain superhero game.
I know, every time you turned up in any zone in City of Heroes, the Rikti would invade it. It was quite unsettling, really, the frequency. Way beyond coincidence. But yes, seeming to happen to me a lot in Defiance at the moment.
So, has anyone got anything else they want to discuss?
I think I'm out. I need my whiteboard.
Okay then. You can go along to our website, leave us comments and stuff. You can go to the Steam group, which is How to Murder Time, and get free games. Or give away free games.
Limited availability. Yeah.
Or give away all your cards. No, please don't give me all your cards. Cards.
You'd hope there was some sort of accept button required on the
I think there is an accept button.
Oh, enforced trading. That'd be fantastic.
Mandatory trading.
Yeah.
Want them. Stop.
If you could go onto iTunes and leave us a review, that would be fantastic. And you can catch me on Moving On. Last week was... What was the film last week?
I know, you were there. I haven't listened to it yet.
Last week's film was brilliant.
Last week's film was an 80s fish-out-of-water comedy.
No, last week's film was Hackers.
Hackers.
Ah.
Yeah, I didn't like
that. That is brilliant.
I like that.
And next week's film is... some Christopher Walken thing.
Good work.
I prepared for that. See, no whiteboard.
You can catch Mike on kiasa.org, is it?
That's the one.
The org, yeah. There we go.
And also on a Steam guide, which you wrote for.
Well, linked into Mike Kiasa's Steam guide.
He is your go-to guide for War Thunder.
He is, yes. The world's leading expert. Other experts are available.
Leading expert.
The only one not on YouTube.
Ah, yes. YouTube, where everyone's gone now.
I know, there's a lot to be said for instructional paperbacks.
Do they still sell those?
I don't know.
Greedy guides.
The same thing I want to learn is go to YouTube now. Everything from taking over the world downwards.
All on there.
So, yeah, if you join us next week, we'll have more of the same.
See you next time.
Soupy Twist.